Go ahead.
It is my privilege to introduce our speaker for tonight. This is a man of action. When he saw the extreme bias in the mainstream media, he didn't just complain about it, he did something about it. In 2020, he started a solely grassroots-funded conservative news outlet that today is the largest alternative conservative news outlet in the country. He also recently held an amazing rally at the Tennessee State Capitol against illegal immigration, and is helping conservative candidates win across the entire state. Please join me in giving a warm welcome to the Brandon Lewis.
Thank you. You're very kind. Appreciate you. Guys, I'm excited to be here to talk to you about a variety of things. Often I wonder, like, what should I talk to people about? Because you get so wound up in the news, and there's so much that comes to you. After a while, it kind of becomes like a daily blur. I'm like, what's on fire today? What are they trying to sneak past us? What's getting killed over here? And it's like whack-a-mole. Like, the whole legislative session is like whack-a-mole. I think they intentionally do it to keep people out of the dark. Probably half the bills are just going to die, and they just like, we got to run some distraction plays. Let's do these. And so it's just a little, it's hard to kind of bring it all in. But what I'd like to do is tell a little bit about my background for those of you who may not know me that are new. And then I'll talk to you about what happened in the Tennessee legislature. I think I may have handed you all my notes. update you on what's happened in the Tennessee legislature and talk about how we navigate civic involvement as conservative Christians and take questions and ask questions. So I'm going to try to get through my part real quick so I can just have time to hear from you if that's okay, because I've got some questions I'm going to ask y'all. So if anybody feels, I'm going to steal this from over here. I think this is one of them. This will get it done. I'm going to steal yours. I'll give it back to you, though. Maybe. I don't know. I might hang on to this. So how many of you subscribe to the Tennessee Conservative? Oh, almost everybody. Anybody not on my list? Oh, well, I will not get any subscriber cards except for you, young lady, please. I'm going to give you a card before you leave. So thank you all for subscribing. So much of this that I'm going to tell you about is kind of a recap. If you want to think about it, it's almost summarizing everything that had happened in the session. But if you haven't seen me before, as she mentioned, in 2020, it's like I got hit by a ton of bricks when they started shutting everything down. And I even in April of 2020, I was on a bridge, like leading a protest in Chattanooga. And there were people that showed up. And it's like, we just want our businesses open. We want our lives back to normal. No, we don't want to take this. No, we don't want to put that on our face. And all that turned out to be true. And the people who led us through that catastrophe of moral leadership are still in power today in Tennessee. And so when you see good things get killed and bad things get passed in a Republican supermajority, you know it's simply because that when they faced that first trial in 2020, they stomped all over our constitutional rights. So these are the same men in basically the same positions doing the same thing they did before, which is primarily, as far as I can tell, serving the corporations and the federal government to some degree. I mean, it's just, it's rough to watch. And so when you're a conservative Christian and you watch that, it's very tough to want to push back and to persist and to go on, but I'm going to talk about why it's important to do that as we go through here. So let's talk about what happened in the legislature. We had a few wins. A lot of them were almost purely symbolic, but we did get some good things done, and I'm going to read through some of these. And I'm not going to read the bill numbers because y'all've all got this here. As enacted, clarifies a person's not required to solemnize a marriage they don't agree to. Two people come to you. Man wants to marry a man. Woman wants to marry a woman. If you're clergy, you can say no and not get sued. Extend lifetime orders of protections to victims of stalking. Allows unvaccinated families to adopt kids. Signed by Governor Lee. That was a friend of mine, Gail, that lives up on Signal Mountain. Y'all may know her from the legislature. She lobbied and lobbied and lobbied for that because she'd been put in that same situation. Requires law enforcement to report on illegal aliens to the feds if they are picked up after committing another crime. Now, this is better than nothing. Congratulations, Cameron Sexton and Randy McNally. You did something just slightly better than nothing. It's slightly better than nothing. But trying to report this, these people to the feds, to me, is like trying to report a robbery to the robber. It's like, Mr. Burglar, I'd like to report a break-in. Really? Well, I'm the one doing it. And so, like, you're going to report to the federal government who is not following our immigration laws that you have now found a lawbreaker that you're not going to do anything about so that they cannot do anything about it. I'm just saying, it doesn't seem like it would do much. But they did something. Yes, yes, that is the number one goal of every session, to do something. Something, no matter how bad it is. Requires law enforcement to report. Okay, we already said that. Tennessee Foster and Adoptive Parent Protection Act basically means if you have a kid, maybe through DHS, and or even if they're your own kid, as far as I understand, and if they say, I'm a boy, you don't have to affirm you're a boy if they're a girl. Okay, it's crazy we have to pass these. Social media platforms require parental consent. Requires Tennessee public schools to provide gun safety training. I think that's good. Allows private schools to adopt their own handgun carry policies for faculty and staff. I think it's good. Local law enforcement agencies can assign SROs to these blue cities that won't take them. I mean, they're in this crime-ridden hellscape of a school where nobody learns anything. And they're like, no, we have the most shootings, and we have the most muggings, and we have the most everything around the school and in the school, but we definitely don't want anybody that might look at it from a third party. And that's what that's all about. And so the legislation is essentially they can put somebody in there whether they want to or not. Requires election coordinators to compare statewide voter bases with the Department of Motor Safety to make sure no illegal aliens are voting. That got killed the last time around. I'm amazed it's made it this far this time. They killed it last time, and it's going through, and maybe it's a slightly different version. Restoring state, the five biggest disappointments. Restoring state sovereignty through Nullification Act was deferred to summer study. It's the same as being killed. That's Bowling's very good. I mean, and today, I mean, we need as a state to have a mechanism so when the federal government tries to do to us what they did in 2020 or anything else, we can say, no, thank you. You can't do that here in Tennessee. That's unconstitutional. We'll fight you on it. You got to do it with your own agency. You can't do it through ours. Like, not to have that. I mean, but I'm not surprised this died, and here's why. The legislature during 2020 and 2021 would not even stand up to the governor and be a separate branch of government. Like, they just completely ceded their power to him for, like, ad nauseum. Wouldn't even represent the districts of the people they voted, had no voice whatsoever, never even took a vote on the stuff, let him do it all because they were probably afraid of being assigned blame. And so they just let him walk all over us. Nobody wanted to be caught holding the bag and doing the right thing and make a good moral judgment that this was all crazy. And so these same people, if they're going to miss a federal dollar, or if they're going to be in conflict with the federal government, which feeds the apparatus, they're like, we might lose a few dollars. Just like Bill Leave, when they was trying to give people back their medical freedoms, he left out medical workers and people that got a federal check. So if you're a medical worker and if you get a federal check in Tennessee, you're a second-class citizen. And so these are the same people. So the fact that that got killed is not crazy. Sought to prohibit adversaries in the United States from doing business with the state of Tennessee. Basically, China can't do business with Tennessee. Why couldn't something like that pass? There's an Iris Rudder failed in the House subcommittee by a voice vote led by Iris Rudder. These voice votes are terrible. And people that pass things that are controversial by voice votes are cowardly, and they're just trying to cover up their record. I can't remember. I'm going to speak out of turn. Sought to increase fines for transporting illegal aliens in the state was killed by Todd Gardenhire, John Lundberg, and Kerry Roberts. Sought to increase fines for transporting illegals. That was killed, and these are all Republicans. Was taken off notice by Todd Gardenhire. So he single-handedly killed that one himself. Bill sought to protect intelligence. If the FBI wants to do what they've done to so many in Tennessee, apparently the Republicans think that's okay. And they would not even make a motion for it to be heard. They cared so little about it. And that was Todd Gardenhire, Don White. And they, you know, there's this, I don't know, some kind of fake Family Freedom and Fun Organization Coalition. I don't know what it's called. But anyway, they gave Dawn White Conservative of the Year. And like, her voting record's far from Conservative of the Year. And they had recognized somebody else. I'm like, I've never even seen this guy do anything. What is this? It's very confusing. And then sought to protect. So the FBI bill died. Things that are alive that you should care about. Allowing schools to hire retired police officers and veterans. We have another one that authorized faculty and staff members of a school to carry a concealed handgun on school grounds with some training. I think that's good. Somebody walks into a building with a gun, like, are you going to negotiate with them for 20 minutes, stall them while the cops come? No. I mean, if somebody else doesn't have a gun, you are toast. You're a sitting duck. And it is crazy that lawmakers would push not making these environments for our children safe. But that's still alive, so maybe we can see that. prohibit foreign party-controlled businesses owning land in Tennessee. Bans pride flags in Tennessee classrooms. That's still alive, although some conservatives or some Republicans voted against it. Prevents cities and municipalities in Tennessee from, this is kind of funny, establishing or enforcing red flag gun laws. But the state of Tennessee just passed one for like mental health stuff. Like you go see a shrink, the shrink says, I'm sorry, you're crazy, you don't need a gun. Most shrinks I know are crazy. Yes. I've known quite a few psychiatrists, counselors, and like, you are wackadoodles. I mean, you're fun to drink a beer with, but you are wackadoodles, and you're going to be deciding whose gun rights it gets to be retained. I think there should be due course, just like in all legal proceedings. Allows lawsuits against anyone taking minors out of the state without consent of their parents, and some bills have just been put behind the budget, and I'm not going to read the rest of those on there because you can read them later. But as you can hear from that little list, it's just not very impressive. And the thing that drives me batty, they don't campaign this way. I have yet to see on a campaign sign, moderate squish Republican Jones. But Todd Gardenhire never goes to a group of people and goes, you know what, I'm really for illegal aliens. And every time there's a bill that comes, I kill it. Because I'm a moderate, and I think we need the cheap labor, and somebody's got to mow the grass. I think that's what they say to their friends, but they run like, oh, I'm just hard charging. I'm not going to grow the government. Bill Lee said he was going to shrink the size of government. He's grown it every year he's been in business. I mean, business, probably the same thing. It seems like they almost coexist up there in Nashville. And so, but they don't campaign that way. Old Southern Democrat, running as Republican, I wish you give me your vote. Like, they never just tell them, like, what their moderate position is and try to argue for it. They always run for office as if they're conservative, then they get up there and they vote completely different. And so that's a big issue. So there are a few things I gave you out here if you want to take them. There's just, I mean, most of y'all have already subscribed, so the one lady who hasn't, we're going to get you. But at any rate, so number one, how do you engage in politics as a conservative Christian? I heard a good message on this at our church here recently. You can't be ashamed of your faith or your God in any environment that you're in, and it's typically going to cost something. It conflicts with culture, so you're going to lose social standing. You're going to be perceived as being unkind if you say that it says in the Bible that a man should be with a woman and a woman should be with a man, and that this has served our civil society, and marriage has served our civil society for so long. And it's partly we've seen it work, and then it's also God's word. And you say that, and it's like it's hate speech. It's hate speech, right? And so you just have to understand that there's going to be social cost. And I don't think that God calls us to change events. I think he challenges us to change our hearts and to act. He just challenges you. You find this little thing that you can do, and you go do that thing, whatever that thing is that you can do. And be effective and be honest with yourself, but go do that thing. And then trust that in the end everything's going to be all right, but I have called you to take a stand. And so you have to do that. And it's not going to be pleasant, and it may be one of those things that gets worse as you go. Sometimes you do things that are in his will, and it gets worse as you go because you're persisting in it. And so another thing I think is you need to decide to take some kind of real measurable action. Once your heart's in the right place, your hands need to be in the right place. You need to be doing something with your time and your money. And I think there's a few things here. Number one is being a conservative isn't something you feel or believe. It's something you live, and it can be measured by time and money. It's almost got a metric. You could say, show me your bank account and your calendar for the last 6 months. Let's see what you've done. Yes, you are a conservative, or no, you're not. You maybe have interest, political interest, but, you know, I watch action movies where people kill one another, but I don't do that. I just have an interest in it, right? I just have an interest in it. That's not the same as doing it, right? But we often confuse having a conservative interest with being a functional conservative, and I think those two are as far as the East is the West. Take on a role and do it with excellence. Y'all are going to figure out who's going to do what here, so it sounds like. So you have got to go, okay, what's the one thing I can do? I'll make sure the meeting's set up every day. I'll type up a 500-word summary on what happened at the school board meeting. I'll there's something I can do. I can do this. I can't do everything. I may not even be able to do the role. Maybe I just help the person doing the role. But find something, measure it in time or money, and then go do it. And then if somebody says, well, how would you measure that? Well, I knocked on 1,000 doors. I made 5,000 phone calls. I went to the Capitol 3 times this year. I had luncheon with 3 of my state reps, and we had a group together, and we talked to them. It's like, I'm trying to do something. Everybody does something. You can be very effective. And I would also say, you know, I think you should follow the improper channels. And the improper channels are to become an informed, capable candidate yourself. If you can, we need more people to run for office. We truly do, that have some talent and some conviction. You can work for a candidate. There's probably some running. I'm going to ask y'all about who's running that I might need to know about while I'm here today. You may want to put out signs, write letters, work events, whatever you can do for them. Give them money. Give them more money. There are people in this room that give us money, and it's helpful. It's just helpful because, like, this stuff, like paying reporters, is expensive. And so you've got to invest. And that is one thing I tell conservative groups every time I go somewhere. The reason we don't have more conservative candidates is because there's not a conservative donor base. The reason we don't have conservative candidates is because there's not a conservative donor base. It's not that if there was a conservative candidate, then there would be a donor base, because I've seen conservative candidates. The donor base didn't matriculate. There's not a base, so there's not a candidate. And so we have got to become better as Christians giving, because what has happened is these corporations have filled that vacuum. So somebody conservative runs, and they've got to just claw, scrape, and grind to barely make enough to win against the establishment. And if they're conservative, the establishment will run a candidate against them the next primary. They always do. And now they're like, well gosh, I can't see. That's too much time, too much money. And then you get a couple $1,000 checks and a $5,000 check. And then now you owe somebody a favor. And maybe you're decently conservative the second legislation session. And then it's just like, well, if I'm going to climb up here, I got to do whatever. And there's no money back home. There's only votes. And the money's harder to get than the votes are, because the voters don't keep up with what's going on. And if I mail them a few postcards and put up some billboards, they'll probably vote for me, because they know me, and their friends maybe know me. And so that's what happens over and over again. So we have to break that cycle. Give to ML4. There's no reason that y'all should have a deficit, in my opinion. There should be no reason that there's a role that goes unfilled. Well, somebody should be able to be recruited to fill them. And I think you can get more done with a group of special forces people that are pulling together than you can a mob of folks that don't want to get out and do anything. And so I recently started our Signal Mountain Conservative Club, because I want to know what's going on my mountain. And I've got to practice what I preach, even though I don't need another project. But we're getting together ahead of the election just to get everybody informed and engaged. And everybody's just organically going to give or donate their time, but we are going to track it. So there's going to be a social component. Like, what are you doing? You done anything? You ain't done anything. Maybe this is not the group for you. I got 15 other do-nothing groups you can go see. I got a list of them. Which one do you want? I got 15 flavors here. Like, the groups that go do. And there's a few of them. And Moms for Liberty has been there. And so at the end, I think that you have to leave it in God's hands, and then you have to have a good night's rest. Make what I always say to myself: I'm going to make my list, I'm going to do my best, I'm going to let the Lord sort out the rest. Because I'm a list maker, and I will make lists. And one other thing I would say that's probably pretty helpful is not to have real thin skin, and not to pick a bunch of fights. Don't have real thin skin, but don't pick a bunch of fights, because I watch conservatives all the time. It's like, oh, there's some kind of issue. Well, I'm all mad about this issue, and then they like burn every bridge around town. And then the next issue comes up, and like, where's my bridges? Well, you burned them the last time. And so you've got to be careful, because there will be another candidate, there will be another issue. There's always something rolling that conservatives are split on. And so when we agree with folks about 80% of the time, we just need to take it issue by issue, but not take it personally, and then move on to the next thing. Because even in a primary, not everybody's going to support the same candidate in many cases. What are you going to do? You know, you can't get all wound up about it. I'm just ran out of energy to be wound up about this stuff. So everybody else is wound up. I'm not that wound up about it. I was so wound up for so long, I'm wound out. I can't do it anymore. The spring has sprung. There's no more tension in there. I'm just going to tell y'all what's happening and hope that some people pay attention and change things. So that's really all I have for you today. But I would like to take any questions that you have. And then I would also like to ask y'all a few myself that I have written down.
I got one question.
Yes, ma'am.
Is Tennessee Conservative doing anything to outreach to the pastors?
Are we doing anything to reach out to pastors? Absolutely not. Because I have limited time, and that is not something I can fit in, and we have a skeleton crew. It's all we can do right now. I was talking to Norman back there to get a candidate list. Like, who's running and who actually has a chance of winning and who's conservative? Like, that's what we're all wound up in, and we can barely keep up with it. And so, and I've had people reach out to me, like, I'll be your volunteer grassroots outreach director. I'm like, I don't want you to go spend all your time asking people to subscribe for my paper. May not pay you, but I can't afford to pay you. And so it's kind of one of those things, you just run out of time. And so there's so many things I'd like to chase and do. But we do our Rhino report. I'm going to try to put together this year a who I'd vote for list. Everybody's going to agree with it. That's fine. And a few other things we do every year. And that's about all I've got the energy to do, because I do this as a volunteer just like y'all do. Yes, ma'am.
So I just want to make a comment that I find really helpful when you have who's on, like, the finance committee, and you have all of those emails in there. That has changed a lot of things for me, where I could cut and paste.
Yes, that's the whole point. I mean, the government wants your engagement to be difficult and onerous and regulated and measured and monitored and everything else, but they don't want their activities measured or monitored or looked at. They just want you to be measured and monitored and looked at, and it shouldn't be the other way around. Like, we've gotten the cart before the horse in many cases with our government at the state level. So yes, and they even look at it. I don't know. They don't want y'all to know anything. They're not happy with my reporting. I've talked to two or three elected officials here lately, and they say every time our caucus gets together, the Tennessee Conservative is mentioned.
Good. That's awesome.
Because we're the only publication that reveals anything that's true about their voting record.
Right.
For example, we had that Protect Tennessee Borders rally. 200-something people showed up there. We had lawmakers speaking. Could not get a single solitary media outlet to cover it after sending out roughly like 450 press releases. Didn't cover it before or during. But there was an illegal immigration supportive group. Like, we need more legal immigration. Please don't do anything to curtail illegal immigration. And they reported and covered that. But GOP primary voters asking for illegal immigration to stop, mainstream media won't touch that with a 10-foot pole. It's the state of the corporately owned media and the corporately owned party in cahoots with one another. But the beauty is there are so many bright spots in Tennessee, like the Sumner County Constitutional Conservatives. Like, they have just taken their little local area by storm. They're very organized. I think Rick Dram's group's doing a good job. Y'all are working and getting stuff done locally. You don't always succeed the first time out. Sometimes, you lose round one and you got to go back and fight round two and three and win. And it's just how it is. That's politics, right? You can't win them all. And so I see stuff. But the other thing I see is I've watched people change their voting records. Like, Todd Gardenhire's terrible. Terrible, but he ain't as bad as he used to be. He really isn't. Like, the guy went from being like an F minus to an F. I mean, I've seen him move a little. I've seen him move. And they just get scared because they start getting a reputation back in their home district. It's like, I mean, why is that newspaper always telling people that you're a rhino? Well, you see, they got it all wrong here. And, they try to shuck and jibe. But then after a while, they keep reading the articles. It's like, I think this guy's lying to me. Most of them are. I mean, you don't run like a conservative and vote like a Southern Democrat without being a liar. You can't do both. It's one or the other. And so that's almost like, I wonder if politics has just turned into the art of lying repeatedly. And if you lie repeatedly for a living or for a position, after a while you do something and like it becomes who you are. And so everything probably gets blurry, I'd assume, at some point. And so this is awful. I never thought I'd say this. I shouldn't have married a Church of God woman. Sometimes I think, like, is there some kind of demonic force up in Nashville, like, during COVID? I'm like, how do humans treat each other so poorly over so little, so quickly? Like, that seemed like a great darkness.
Money.
And yeah, money and all that stuff too. But I mean, gosh, what kind of a nexus of like conflicting evil and awful had to happen for all that stuff. And so often I have to remind myself, it's like it says it in the Bible over and over again, that this is a, that there is a spiritual component to all this stuff that is politically driven. And I think we forget about that because we're desensitized to it. But I don't know, man. I don't know what the answer is. All I can do is just keep reporting this stuff and try to win my little fights in my neighborhood to make sure I don't have the two worst. I have Patsy Hazelwood and Todd Gardenhire. There's a pair of deuces. That's awful. And it's like, how? It's like you could roll the wheel 15 times and not hit that. And I got it right there. It's like, here they are. So we're hopefully they're both up, so we'll see if we can get them replaced. I feel real good about one, and I'm feeling better about another one. So we'll see. Yes, ma'am.
I have a comment and a question. The comment is about the churches and the pastors. So in my church, there's a lot of people that know that I'm pretty connected, and I keep up with what's going on in the state legislature. So when it comes time for elections, I send an email out
with
my recommendations.
Good.
And they send it out to all their friends and families. And I don't think it's fair for us to just wait for the pastor to do that. I think we need to do it.
Oh, absolutely.
We, the people, is on the Constitution. So
yeah.
We need to be,
if your pastor doesn't do it, you need to talk to him about it. And I'll tell you why.
Yes.
Our pastor, Frank Ramshure, in Chattanooga, Tennessee, at Calvary Chapel, has a great civics and culture program that he developed. And he was one of the first churches to open back up. And he preached on Nehemiah and how you need to get involved and do something. And that, like, that moved me. And it was like that was the final straw. It's like, we're going to start this thing. Never ran a paper. Don't know anything about running a paper. Not a reporter. But I'm like, we're going to do this. So we're going to do it. And so when I left, and he has since brought in Dennis Prager, Metaxas. I don't keep up with national stuff, but and a bunch of other famous right-wing, you know, commentators, et cetera. And experts, subject matter experts, and just like educate, and even the church pastors educate people culturally, because when you read through the Bible, it is a continual and constant commentary on culture. It is unceasing. It is relentless. And God never sent people, said, would you please go see these people and confirm that they're cultural? You know, everything's going great. He never did that. He's all like, could you go tell these people this is going to end up bad if they don't change their ways? And then they would murder them, and then that process would repeat, and they were killed multiple different ways. They were hung and boiled, and their heads were cut off. I mean, it's like, these are the things that happen when you tell truth to a society that has started to reject the framework that the Constitution was formed on.
I agree with that 100%, that pastors can talk about what's in the scripture, but they can't tell us who to vote for. And to be honest with you, 90% of the people I know have no idea what issues went through the state legislature.
Yeah, I agree. No, it's more than that.
Okay, you're involved, you know what's going on, who do I vote
for? Yeah, well, I think to put it another way, our guys actually, like, they do, like, they tell people, like, they have candidates and stuff, like, it's, the church got out of politics, and then the nation got unchurched. Because they just quit talking about anything cultural and anything that's offensive.
They still keep their tax-exempt status and say who to vote for.
Well, there's all that too. So
yes.
I don't. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but they can talk about it. They just can't recommend anybody.
That's all false. If they spend more than 50% of their dollars on campaigning, then they lose their
5 points. They're not
Well, I know, but I'm just saying, let's not get off in the weeds. But at any rate, I don't know. I mean, the first thing is, a lot of it has nothing to do with their tax-exempt status. I think that might be some little small itty-bitty. I mean, there's probably a couple of shucksters that are really worried about it because they're hanging on by a thread. But people that have healthy churches that are preaching the gospel, that are attracting followers, because when you preach the gospel, our church is full. It's absolutely full. When you preach the gospel, the church fills up. When you preach some kind of watered-down, weird version of it, like, it just, people, like, I don't know what happens. It doesn't seem to stick very well. And so where it's preached, there's growth. Not to say that there aren't other administrative things that have to happen in a church for it to succeed. There are. But nonetheless, I think most of them are just afraid. I think they are more fearful of men than God. I think that's just generally it. And it's a very powerful phobia. I mean, you see people right now that were shamed into wearing masks, and it is like 3 years later, and they're wearing them. These are not people that are dying on emphysema. These are not people that, like, have the plague and are limping in. I mean, these are healthy 6'5" men. Well, if they just left the gym, they got a mask on their face. They've been psychologically damaged by all this craziness. And it is sad. It is weird, and it's crazy because, you know, When I was saying it 3 years ago, I felt like I knew I was right, but it was fringe. And now everybody's like, even like so many of my liberal friends are, yeah, I was kind of taking advantage. I was kind of stupid there. I'm sorry. I'm like, yes, don't do that again. You need to pay attention. This should be, hopefully some people, I don't know if it put people to sleep or woke them up. I think it probably put them to sleep more than woke them up. Probably maybe conditioned them instead of didn't. I don't know. I have no idea. These are things above my pay grade. Yes, sir. Let me get this gentleman. There's a question. I thought those were three or four questions. Well, how many are we to
go?
Go one more. Go one more. You're fine.
I just want, the question is school choice dead?
Yes. I don't know, and that is one of those issues when you like poll our readership. Some of them are for it, and they're radically for it, and then some of them are against it, and they're radically against it, and then some people are in the middle, and they don't care. But it's really not as mainstream of a concern. Like, for example, you think it is because if you keep up with politics, but when we survey people, like what their legislative concerns are, school choice is, it's like way down here. It's not in the bottom. It's not nothing, but it's like here, and it's primarily people like me who have school-age children. They're in the middle of all of it. Yes, sir. Norman, go ahead.
Brandon, can you tell us your background? How did you get involved in it? Are you a native Tennessean? I mean, just your general background.
I grew up in Alabama, a sawmill slat house, a wood-burning stove. We had old red well water belched out of the sink. Dad had club foot and facial deformities. We had an attic fan and no air conditioner, unpainted wafer board ceilings. We were poor. We lived in like this little shanty area of just abject Appalachian poverty. And so that's where I grew up in Alabama. And then I went to Jacksonville State, and because all my friends were going to school, and I guess I got to go to school. And so I was a good student. I always studied and kept up, and I had a good GPA, and I graduated with high marks at my undergraduate and graduate school. But that's where I grew up. And then I moved to Chattanooga in 2002 and just fell in love with the area. Loved the city. I lived in the city for 20 years. Great people, wonderful restaurants. I love live music. They got lots of live music venues in Chattanooga. And I'm like a tourist director for Chattanooga. If people want to move there, I'm like, you should really move. It's pretty good. Let me tell you the 15,000 reasons why you should move here. Like, I'm an advocate for the place. And it has been sad to watch left-leaning leadership turn it into like hobos on every corner, dirty streets, not everywhere, not in the tourist areas, but where I used to live, folks walking up and down the road, look, they're on 15 different kinds of drugs, and it's just, there are sections of the town that's not where the tourist area in Chattanooga, they're just starting to do this and getting very unsafe. And so my wife and I, we got to move. And so we went to Signal Mountain. I hated leaving my home and the city, but it just got to where it was, I just didn't see it recovering.